Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 11, the Book of Everlasting Day. And last week we reached the climax of the whole poem where the Supreme tells Savitri, "Forever love, O beautiful slave of God." What is its lover? Page 702. 702. And I'm about to read now at line 1114. "Forever love, O beautiful slave of God." And he tells Savitri, "You are my lasso, the lasso of my rapture's widening noose. Become my cord of universal love, the spirit ensnared by the force to delight of creation's oneness, sweet and fathomless. Compelled to embrace my myriad unities and all my endless forms and divine soul. O mind, grow full of the eternal peace. O word, cry out the immortal litany. Built is the golden tower, the flame child born." So if we read on from there, he will tell her that she can now return to earth with Satyavan, and what this great victory of hers will mean for the earth. Patty, will you begin?
"Descend to life with him thy heart desires, O Satyavan, O luminous Savitri. I sent you forth of old beneath the stars, a dual power of God in an ignorant world, in a hedged creation shut from limitless self, bringing down God to the insentient globe, lifting earth beings to immortality. In the world of my knowledge and my ignorance, where God is unseen and only is heard a name, and knowledge is trapped in the boundaries of mind, and life is hauled in the dragnet of desire, and matter hideth the soul from its own sight, you are my force at work to uplift earth's fate, myself that moves up the immense incline between the extremes of the spirit's night and day."
Thank you. Up to this point in the long speech of the Supreme Lord, he has been addressing Savitri. He's been saying, "Thou, thee, thine." No? But now he addresses them both. He says, "Descend to earth." This is to Savitri, "descend to life with him thy heart desires." But then he addresses them both. He says, "O Satyavan, O luminous Savitri." And he uses the plural pronoun, "you. I sent you forth of old beneath the stars." Both of them. Together they form a dual power of God, power with two aspects. A dual power of God in an ignorant world, this material creation of twilight. He says this ignorant world that we live in is a hedged creation, shut from limitless self. It is somehow shut off, hedged off from eternity and infinity. And I've sent you down as a dual power to bring God down to the insentient globe, to this material planet that we live on, Earth. And your task is to lift Earth beings to immortality. Earth beings are mortal, subject to death, to ignorance. But your task is to lift them up to the immortal state. He says, in that world where my knowledge and my ignorance are mixed, where God is unseen and we only hear his name, where knowledge is trapped, confined and limited in the boundaries of mind, and life is hauled in the dragnet of desire. You know what a dragnet is? In the fisheries, no, they will let down a big net and pull it along the bottom and carry all the fish to the ship. No? So he says, your life, your mortal life is like that. You're caught in this dragnet of desire. And in this world, matter hides the soul from its own sight. It can't see itself in all the other forms, in all the material forms. So you two together, the you, dual form, you are my force at work to uplift Earth's fate and myself that moves up the immense incline, the huge slope between the extremes of the spirit's night and day, the night of material inconsciousness, the day of full superconscious. So, as human beings, you are moving up. You are myself, my supreme self, in the human form, rising up this immense incline of evolution. Again, he uses the pronoun you, so it refers to both of them. Although we can think that what Savitri represents is the Shakti, the supreme conscious force, and what Satyavan represents is the individual soul, or the soul of humanity.
Here, page 60, in relation to this, 60.
Well, let's not go back to page 60 just now.
You say something interesting, no? It's connected again.
Would you read? Yes. You would read?
Yes. Since my soul that climbs from nascent night, through life and mind and super nature's vast, to the supernal light of timelessness, and my eternity hid in moving time, and my boundlessness cut by the curve of space. If it climbs to the greatness it has left behind, and to the beauty and joy from which it fell, to the closeness and sweetness of all things divine, to light without bounds and light illimitable, taste of the depths of the ineffable bliss, touch of the immortal and the infinite.
Thank you. So here he clearly speaks of Satyavan, he. He is my soul that's climbing, go up this immense incline from the nescient night, the night of not knowing, of unconsciousness. He is climbing up. The soul mounts from that original state through life and mind and even higher, super nature's vast. The soul goes on climbing to the supernal light of timelessness and my eternity hid in moving time and my boundlessness cut by the curve of space. This is the great journey of the soul, the evolutionary journey of the soul, which...
Time and space, capital is...
Yes, so this is the time and space which constitute our universe. No? beyond, in the transcendent state, in the timelessness, there isn't this progression of time. Everything is timeless. And there isn't this extension of space. So that is why he says that's what the soul is rising to. It will eventually achieve the transcendent state beyond the time and space which define this manifestation, this creation. And that is what it has left behind. The soul is climbing to the greatness it has left behind when it agreed to incarnate and enter into this world of time and space and fragmentation into individuality. The soul is climbing back to the greatness it has left behind and to the beauty and joy from which it fell. It's climbing back to the closeness and sweetness of all things divine. It's climbing back to light without bounds, boundless light and illimitable life, and back to where it can taste the depths of the ineffable's bliss, the bliss of that which is beyond all expression, back to the touch of the immortal and the infinite. That is the original state of the soul, which we have all, our souls have all accepted to leave in order to experience this adventure of unconsciousness and evolution. So that is what Satyavan is representing, the soul, the individual, the divine soul in each being. And he's going to elaborate that further. Would you read, Mom? Yes.
He is my soul that grows out of the mist to reach humanity's heights of lucent thought and the vicinity of truth sublime. He is the Godhead growing in human lives and in the body of earth beings' forms. He is the soul of man climbing to God in nature's surge out of earth's ignorance.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
No. In Christian theology, there's a big debate about whether animals have souls or not. But here Sri Aurobindo says it very clearly that the soul has come up through the whole spectrum of evolution, from the material forms to the living forms, from animals to human beings, and that the progression will go on much further. In the body of earth beings' forms, or all the forms here on the earth.
This he is also for Satyavan.
This is for Satyavan, yeah.
So he is growing, that is not individual growth, but the collective.
I think it is both, actually. He says he's doing it individually, but he's also the soul of man, of humanity, climbing to God.
Growing in human life.
Yes. Yes.
I can say the definition of soul is the Godhead.
Yes. The soul is the divine part in all earth forms and beings.
Divinity.
Yes, the divinity. Yes.
Could you explain a little more this surge, nature's surge?
A surge is a wave, a powerful wave. So that's the powerful wave of evolution, which is carrying us out of the ignorance towards the higher consciousness. So if we remember Sri Aurobindo's author's note, which is at the very beginning of the book, where he has defined the role of each of the characters. No? he says that Satyavan is the soul, carrying the divine truth of being within itself. That's what the name means, the one who is holding or containing the truth. But descended into the grip of death and ignorance. The soul has entered into the world, this world of matter, in which we are dominated by death and ignorance. And Savitri is the divine word, the word of divine creation, daughter of the sun, goddess of the supreme truth. She also comes down, but she comes down, she is born to save the soul, represented by Satyavan, the soul of man. So that's what comes next. Norman, would you read, please?
O Savitri, thou art my spirit's power, the revealing voice of my immortal word, the face of truth upon the roads of time, pointing to the souls of men, the roots to God. While the dim light from the veiled spirits peak falls upon matter's dark inconscient sleep, and if a pale moon in a dense glare, and mind in a half light moves amid half truths, and the human heart knows only human love, and life is a stumbling and imperfect force, and the body counts out its precarious days. You shall be born into man's dubious hours, in forms that hide the soul's divinity, and show through veils of the earth's doubting air, my glory breaking as through clouds the sun, or burning like a rare inward fire, and with my nameless influence fill men's lives.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. So first he speaks to Savitri. He's spoken about Satyavan, what is. Now again he speaks to Savitri and says, thou art, you are my spirit's power. You are the force of my divine existence and being. You are the revealing voice of my immortal word. This is an aspect of Savitri which is shown in the traditional story, in the traditional Mahabharata tale. Sri Aurobindo says that there are many features of that story which reveals that it's part of that it's a remnant of us, one of the many symbolic myths of the Vedic cycle. When in the traditional story, Savitri follows death, it is her correctness of speech which wins him over. That she can reveal truth through her speech. So this is a characteristic. She represents the divine word of creation and the revealing voice of truth. You represent truth. You are the face of truth upon the roads of time, and you point the souls of men, the roots to God. You're like a signpost showing the way. One of the readers of our journal, Invocation, has pointed out these lines. He says that these four lines, they're an exact description of the poem. We can read them like that, oh, Savitri. Sri Aurobindo saying, thou art my spirit's power, the revealing voice of my immortal word, the face of truth upon the roads of time, pointing to the souls of men, the roots to God. It's nice, no?
Also coming that in the Mother, from Sri Aurobindo, we don't have the voice recorded, so Savitri, the mother, has it. and also the face of truth from the mother. We have so many pictures, and also from Sri Aurobindo, it is rare.
Yes. So then he again speaks to both of them. He says, while the dim light from the veiled spirit's peak falls upon matters stark in conscious sleep, as if a pale moonbeam on a dense glade, the light from the divine comes to us and to earth being like a pale moonbeam in a dense glade where there's many leaves, and so the moonbeam can only filter through very dimly. But this is the light from the peak of the spirit, from the very highest level of superconscious. But that's veiled from us. And as long as mind moves on earth in a half-light, amid half-truths, in our ignorant state, and as long as the human heart knows only human love, as long as life is a stumbling and imperfect force, and the body counts out its precarious days, we can live one day at a time, we never know what's going to happen next. As long as it's like that, you too, shall be born into man's dubious hours. You're going to be born again and again and again into human life in forms that hide the soul's divinity. You'll be born in human forms, like all our human forms, that hide the divinity of the soul. But through the veils of earth's doubting air, you will show, you will give some indication of my glory, which will be breaking through like a sun breaking through clouds, just a ray now and again, Or you'll show my glory burning like a rare and inward fire, and you will be able to fill the lives of human beings with my influence. They won't know who it's coming from. It'll be a nameless influence, but nevertheless, you will spread that influence in the lives of human beings. That's the work that Savitri and Satyavan are given to do. That is their task. And now that Savitri has completed her tapasya, they will be able to do that. He is speaking about what this will mean, the fact that she can descend to earth with Satyavan. They will be working in future to do all this. So I'll just remind that in a letter Sri Aurobindo has said that this story is supposed to have happened far back at the very beginning of human history, when it was necessary to open up this possibility to hew the ways of immortality, he says.
Well, he mentions Savitri's tapasya. So that is represented through this story of how she emerges from her humanness into her great understanding. And so then, now she's hooked up with Satyavan, who's been basically silent through this whole time. Where's the balance, exactly?
Well, this is the story of Savitri.
Yeah, story of Savitri.
But they, I think what he shows at the end of the book is that they have to be together. And that is why when death told her, you can go back now. She said, I can't go back. I can't go back without Satyavan. And it's no use both of us being in your heaven. We have to both be on earth. We are one instrument. We are your sword. We are your lyre, We can't be separated.
So then concept of Ardhangini. Concept of Ardhangini.
Of the two in one.
Yes. Shiva is
two in one, Shiva and Shakti.
Yeah.
The dual power.
Yes.
Together.
Yeah.
So our Dhamini concept of that.
Mm.
So I think this is.
Maybe also in the understanding that Maharshi Aurobindo came together on earth and only together was this new step possible.
Mm-hmm.
New step in evolution.
Yes. Yeah. So then now there will come this long prophecy of what their return to earth and their working together will mean for humanity. That continues till the bottom of page 710. Don, would you read?
Yet shall they look up as to peaks of God and feel God like a circumambient air, and rest on God as on a motionless face. Yet shall there glow on mind, like a horned moon, the spirit's crescent splendor in pale skies, and light man's life upon his Godward road. But more there is concealed in God's beyond, that shall one day reveal his hidden face. Now mind is all and its uncertain way. Mind is the leader of the body and life. Mind the thought-driven chariot of the soul, carrying the luminous wanderer in the night to vistas of a far uncertain dawn, to the end of spirit's fathomless desire, to its dream of absolute truth and utter bliss. There are greater destinies mind cannot surmise, fixed on the summit of the evolving path. The traveler now treads in the ignorance, unaware of his next step, not knowing his goal. Mind is not all his tireless climb can reach. There is a fire on the edge of the world. There is a house of the eternal's light. There is an infinite truth, an absolute power.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about this passage?
In the second line, and feel God like in circumambient air, that's something, the description of the divine presence, which is a New Year's message of this 217. Yeah? That's already always there.
But do we feel it?
Yeah, that's.
But he says, still, some human beings at least will look up, as up to mountain peaks, no? And some will feel the presence like a circumambient air. And of course, the whole creation is resting on God as on a motionless base. And the spirit's splendor like a crescent moon, like a lovely new moon, shall glow on mind. It's not a very, very bright light. You want to say something?
I was wondering about the horned moon, but you say it's crescent.
Yes.
The moon just emerging.
Yes. Crescent means growing. But of course, we also see that shape when the moon is waning. And this is the moon that Lord Shiva wears in his hair.
It's here in the south, we don't have that. We have the moon like that. I have.
Where you in Argentina, you don't see
south,
it like here.
Not like that.
Ah.
For me, it was so beautiful to see it like that with Venus. I never have seen before.
Isn't crescent a shape?
A crescent is that shape,
like that.
The shape of the horned moon.
Like
but crescent means growing. It's crescent. Crescere means to grow in Latin. So there's the crescent moon and there's the gibbous moon, the waning moon. So we receive the light of the spirit like a moon. It does shine on us, but it's a reflected light. It's not the original light of the sun. The moon is perhaps the symbol of the overmind. But anyway, that light will be there somehow, lighting man's life upon his Godward road. But that's not all there is, no? There's more than these possibilities hidden in God's beyond, in the possibilities that he's still going to reveal, that shall one day reveal its hidden face. And he starts to describe our human situation. Now, mind is all. The uncertain ray of mind. It's not a clear, powerful light. It's a wavering, feeble light.
If it is chariot, mind is if it is chariot, then the soul is the chariot.
Yes, yes. Mind is the leader of our body and our life. We are mental beings, yes. No? Even if we are not very perfectly mental beings, that's what we are. It's the leading power in the ignorance, yes. But it's also, as Sushma mentioned, no? In the next line he says, mind is the thought-driven chariot of the soul. So, Lord Krishna is driving the chariot, actually. Yeah.
Is Krishna and mind the same?
No. For us, no, our chariot, the soul, the chariot that our soul is riding in, is driven by thought. But it's being this thought-driven chariot of the soul is carrying the soul, the luminous wanderer in the night, to vistas of a far, uncertain dawn. We don't know when that dawn will come and what it's going to be like. That's where the chariot is carrying us, to the end of the spirit's fathomless desire, what the spirit is longing for and driving towards, to its dream of absolute truth and utter bliss. So that's how it is now, but there's much more concealed in God's beyond. There are greater destinies. Mind cannot surmise. We can't even begin to imagine them. But they are fixed. They're waiting there on the summit of the evolving path, the path that the traveler now treads in the ignorance. Now the traveler, the divine traveler, who has forgotten himself and has to find himself again, is unaware of his next step, not knowing his goal, doesn't know where he's going. But mind is not all his tireless climb can reach. There's something that's impelling us, forcing us to go on traveling. No? However much we would like to rest and stop on the way and be comfortable, we are being forced to climb further. Because on the apex, on the highest point of the great mountain peak, the ladder of the worlds, there is a fire burning, a powerful source of heat and energy and light. There is a house of the eternal's light. There is an infinite truth, an absolute power.
Can the mind not become aware of this limitation?
Yes. That's what Sri Aurobindo is showing us, no? But at the same time, he's telling us you don't always need to be limited by these limitations. There are higher possibilities. In that way, he encourages us to aspire for higher states.
In fact, one of the needs to develop the mind is in order to understand its limitations.
Yes.
The more it develops, the more it realizes its limitations.
What's going on now?
But it can be quite frustrating,
yes.
No? to notice,
yes,
the limitations of the mind.
And in line,
yes,
lines 1151, he says, to reach humanity's heights and lucent thought,
He's giving a lot of importance to lucent thought, clear thought.
Light-filled thought, thought that's filled with light, yes. Yes, please.
My understanding that the mind becomes aware of its limitations, I seem a bit different.
Yes, please share.
It's us who can become aware of
the mind's limitations. It's a more accurate way of putting it. Thank you.
Say that again.
Could
you
repeat
that,
please?
Yeah, we don't. It's us, I'm pointing. Who can become aware of the mind's limitations. The mind is just a mechanism.
Yes. And so that is, we can say it's the awakening soul that becomes aware of the mind's limitations. Yes.
And connecting with the heart and the inner being also makes the mind ridiculous sometimes.
I had this for me. So it is helped by the soul.
These two forces, you together, this dual power, that is the force of the divine pressing down and from within, and the awakening soul, these are the two things that move this process forward. Mm-hmm. Hmm?
And why we are here.
Then that's why we are here. So who will read next? You'll read, Marie-Ange?
The spirit's mightiness shall cast off its mask. Its greatness shall be felt, shaping the world's course. It shall be seen in its own various beams, a star rising from the inconscient night, a sun climbing to the supernatural's peak. Abandoning the dubious middle way, a few shall claim miraculous origin, and some shall feel in you the secret force, and they shall turn beneath a nameless spray, adventurous into a mightier day. Ascending out of the limiting breadth of mind, they shall discover the world's huge design and step into the truth. The bright, the vast. You shall reveal to them the hidden eternities, the breath of infinitude not yet revealed, some rapture of the bliss that made the world, some rush of the force of God's omnipotence, some beam of the omniscient mystery.
Thank you. So a time will come when the spirit's mightiness will cast off its mask, it will remove that veil, that disguise which it is wearing, and its greatness will be felt, that greatness which even now is shaping the course of the world, the way that the world moves. But then it shall be seen in its own veilless beams, not reflected, not through a curtain, clearly. It'll be seen in two ways. I love these two lines. As a star rising from the inconscient night, we will see how that star rises up. But that star is, of course, a sun. And that sun is rising also to the peak of supernature. So while all that is going on, a few people will abandon the dubious middle way, this doubtful way of the twilight of the ignorance. They will glimpse the miraculous origin, and some of them shall feel in you, Savitri, Satyavan, they will feel in you the secret force. And because of that, they will turn from that dubious middle way to meet a nameless tread. They don't know the name. It's that being who's setting his feet doesn't have a name like that. But anyway, they will follow it. Adventurers into a mightier day, a more powerful light. They will rise out of those limiting breadths of mind, and they will discover, they'll become aware of the huge design of the world, the purpose, the aim. Why does all this exist? And why are we here? They will be able to step into the true, the right, the vast. This is the Vedic formula for the supramental world. So you will be revealing to those people about the hidden eternities. You'll be spreading to them the breath, the influence, the life of infinitudes that have not yet been revealed. Some rapture of the bliss that made the world, the original creative delight. Some rush of the force of God's omnipotence. Some beam of the omniscient mystery. Through you, they will get some touch, some glimpse, that all that greatness.
That's the power of this book. This is beyond mine to the supramental.
So I think all this follows on from this line 1161. While the dim light from the veiled spirit's peak. It's all following on from there. As long as things are the way they are now, in this ignorance, as long as mind is the leader, this is the way things will go. A few will turn, a few will have the experiences, and you will be supporting and helping them and bringing them some beam of the omniscient mystery. But now he moves on to something else.
A spirit's mask is imposed on a spirit, or it is...
No, the spirit is... We put on a mask ourselves, no?
Yes. Choice.
Yeah.
For protection.
As a disguise, for fun.
For fun.
Paula. Yeah. Sorry? Oh.
I just thought maybe you had mentioned that last time, because I was not here.
Louder, louder.
Maybe you had mentioned that last time, that on the note of the text is mentioned something about this these paragraphs, that it is a continuously dictated.
Oh, yes.
Maybe you mentioned that last time.
No, I haven't mentioned it. About the composition, I haven't said anything recently at all.
It said that line after line from page 02 to 710, that it flowed like line after line, began to flow from his lips like a smooth and gentle stream, and it was on the next day that the revision was done.
So that's all this. That means this prophecy about the world, the earth's future. Shobindo just saw it and dictated it. Thank you very much for pointing this out.
Apparently one of the last, he could not see anymore.
Yes, he was dictating.
So
this is the scribe to whom he dictated it, our beloved elder brother Nirod Baran, who has laid the foundation stone for Savitri Bhavan. He has taken this dictation and he has written this description. So it's very nice. Thank you. Yes. Of course, these were not the last lines that were dictated. We know that the last lines dictated were from the second canto of Book 6. But what Nirod remarked on was how easily all this flowed. And obviously, Sri Aurobindo had it all absolutely clear in his mind. He just dictated it without any hesitation.
There's no such longest continuous dictated passage.
Yes. Thank you. Paula.
But when the hour of the divine draws near, the mighty mother shall take birth in time and God be born into the human clay in forms made ready by our human lives.
Your human.
By your, I'll try that line again.
Yeah.
In forms made ready. In forms made ready by your human lives. Then shall the truth supreme be given to men. There is a being beyond the being of mind, an immeasurable cast into many forms, a miracle of the multitudinous one. There is a consciousness mind cannot touch, its speech cannot utter, nor its thought reveal. It has no home on earth, no center in man, yet is the source of all things thought and done, the fount of the creation and its works. It is the origin of all truth here, the sun orb of mind's fragmentary rays, infinity's heaven that spills the rain of God, the immense that calls to man to expand the spirit, the wide aim that justifies his narrow attempts, a channel for the little he tastes of bliss.
Thank you. Anything to share, Larry?
I was just struck by this line, then shall the truth supreme be given to men. We've been having a little debate about how much man participates in this supermental glory to come, or whether it's a succeeding being or something like that.
Mm.
Saying it's given to men.
Yes. And perhaps that's what Schaubindo has done.
Mm-hmm. These first three lines, does it, you know, mean there will be an avatar or the
yes, I think it means that. So there's an hour, a very special hour coming, which he's going to tell us more about. So when that approaches, then the Mighty Mother, God, are going to be born in human clay, in human bodies, in forms that have been made ready by your successive lives, you, Savitri, Satyavan. You are preparing the way. As long as mind is dominant, then you will be appearing like great lights on the way, spreading the divine light and influence. But when that hour draws near, then there'll be full incarnations. It seems like two, no? The Mighty Mother and God in forms made ready for your by your human lives. And then that's the time when the gift will be given to human beings. And what does then it seems as if the following lines describe or elaborate what that truth that's given is. There is a being beyond the being of mind. That is an immeasurable, something vast and unlimited, which is cast into many forms. This miracle of the multitudinous one. There's a consciousness mind cannot touch. The speech of mind can't utter that consciousness. Its thought cannot reveal that consciousness. That consciousness has no home on earth, no center in man, but it is the source of all things thought and done. It is the fount, the origin of the creation and all the works of the creation. It is the origin of all truth here in the world. It is the full sun orb of which mind receives only fragmentary rays. It's the infinite heaven that's pouring down the rains of God, the divine energies. That immense reality whose call forces us human beings to expand the spirit. That consciousness is the wide aim that justifies the narrow attempts of human beings. And it is a channel for the little that we taste of bliss. This is the fire on the apex of the world. Let's read a little further. Helmut.
Some shall be made the glorious receptacles and vehicles of the eternal luminous power. These are the high forerunners, the heads of time, the great deliverers of earthbound mind, the high transfigurers of human clay, the firstborn of a new supernal race. The incarnate dual power shall open God's door. Eternal Superman touch earth with time. The Superman shall wake in mortal mind and manifest the hiding demigod or grow into the God light and God force, revealing the secret day in the cave. Then shall the earth be touched by the Supreme. His bright, unveiled transcendence shall illumine the mind and heart and force that lies and act to interpret his inexpressible mystery in a heavenly alphabet of divine divinity science.
Thank you. Well, the high forerunners, it's the first ones, the heralds of the supermind. Of course, there's a description of them in book 3. Do you remember that? Yes. Yeah, of a glorious dawn, yes. Why don't I know which canto it comes in? No, no, it's in book 3. No, no, it's Aswapati speaks it.
Number 350, out of
the paths of the morning star that came. 350, thank you. We'll read it. No.
343, line 350. Well, actually, forerunners of the divine multitude of spells. Can you speak louder, please?
Yes. Can you tell us which page it is?
Well, it's on page 343, and then on line 346, it says, I saw the omnipotence.
Yes, yes. A power arose out of my slumber cell. Yes. Aswapati has a vision. No? First of all, there was alarm and destruction, a dance of Shiva tore the works of time. So on line 346, page 343, there comes this vision. I saw the omnipotence flaming pioneers over the heavenly verge which turns towards life, come crowding down the amber stairs of birth. Forerunners of a divine multitude, out of the paths of the morning star they came into the little room of mortal life. I saw them cross the twilight of an age, the sun-eyed children of a marvelous dawn, the great creators with wide brows of calm, the massive barrier breakers of the world, and wrestlers with destiny in her lists of will, the laborers in the quarries of the gods, the messengers of the incommunicable, the architects of immortality. Into the fallen human sphere they came, faces that wore the immortal's glory still, voices that communed still with the thoughts of God. Bodies made beautiful by the Spirit's light, carrying the magic word, the mystic fire, carrying the Dionysian cup of joy, approaching eyes of a diviner man, lips chanting an unknown anthem of the soul, feet echoing in the corridors of time, high priests of wisdom, sweetness, might, and bliss, discoverers of beauty, sunlit ways, and swimmers of love's laughing fiery floods, and dancers within rapture's golden doors. Their tread one day shall change the suffering earth and justify the light on nature's face.
So this happened before 1950. So I'm thinking the Second World War was the Shiva dancing.
Maybe we are Shiva still dancing. Maybe we are still in this twilight of an age. Shall we stop there for today? Yes, Narendra.
Superman, we say, will come after or before?
After. These are the forerunners. They're going in front before the Superman. But he says there are a few who will be already in contact with that world. You will be supporting those few. That's how evolution happens, no?
That. Forerunners.
Who are the forerunners? Well, we can think that those who were gathered around Sri Aurobindo and the mother, they were the first forerunners. But there are more forerunners to come, I think.
Yeah.
And as we were reading, I was remembering that after Sri Aurobindo's passing, mother was asked, is he going to come back? And she said, yes, he's promised that he will come back in the first supramental body. Mm. Or the first body that is made in a supramental way.
Yeah. But also, Sri Aurobindo wrote something, when the last man is not changed in the world, I walk in.
You will still, until. Yeah.
Yeah. But he...
Did Sri Aurobindo give any cognizance to the work of scientists who were exploring evolution at that time?
I don't know, Don.
Because I just recently, a day or two ago, read that amongst the very, very, very earliest viruses and any kind of thing before the cell that we know it ever formed, one such creature got its mitochondria, etc., 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 and without that having happened in one incident, what we now know as humanity and so on.
Couldn't have happened, yes.
Couldn't have happened. It's according to their theory, their observation.
No, this evolution of life is very beautifully, mysteriously, but very beautifully described in Book 2, Canto 4. In successive sections, the stages. Aswapati sees each of these evolutionary stages leading to.
But that's his way of giving cognizance.
But he didn't know it because of the work of scientists. He knew it because he knew it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Baba has indicated that she was present at every important stage of the development.
Yes. Yes. Wherever and whenever it was possible to manifest a ray of light, I was there.
Carrying on the evolution.
Yes, that's, they asked, what have you been doing? That's what he said, carrying on the evolution. Yeah.
Well, it could be said, and it has been acknowledged, that really for the last 10,000 years, what is what you call evolution, biological evolution, is driven not by biology, but by culture. The human presence and human intelligence. intelligence and creativity that has given rise to the changes in biology. For instance,
but what's the difference? Biology is part of the conscience.
No, for instance, in the last 10 years, that life expectancy in the world has doubled, almost doubled.
Yes.
That is biological change. But it has not come because of biological factors, it has come because of cultural factors.
Yes, so evolution doesn't only work through biology, it works through consciousness, in fact, primarily through consciousness. And the biological, well, whatever changes, the whole series of changes have actually been driven, I mean, I believe this is Sri Aurobindo's view, by the expansion of consciousness.
This is now a strong theory. Mm.
The scientists say that.
Sorry?
Stella de Jardin, who said the same, by your complexity of matter, more consciousness
is able to express itself. Yes, he noticed this. Yes.
And every time again, it is a leap.
So, Sri Aurobindo speaks about a double evolution. There's an evolution of form, of nature, and there's the evolution of consciousness. And the evolution of consciousness is driving the evolution of form in order for more and more and more consciousness, more and more complex forms of consciousness, to be able to be manifested in form.
The development of the Gnostic being, as I recall your reading.
I don't know, maybe. Yeah. So what we're heading for, what we're looking forward to, is the Gnostic being and the Gnostic society, which would be able to manifest a divine life upon earth instead of this mixed life of ignorance and death.
Making the vessel is strong and able to contain that content.
Yes.
To be able
the body has to change. The material substance has to change. Yes. So shall we listen to Mother reading a few lines? Yes.
Opens and seizes me, my captive body. This shall thou henceforth learn from thy heart, forever now. O beautiful slave of God, O blessing of my life. To wind me new around my core and universal love. Descend to life with him, thy heart desire. O Sakiva, O luminous solitary, I sent you forth above. Beneath the star, a jewel power of war in an ignored world, in a creation shot from limitless self, bringing down God to the insentient globe, lifting up. Into immortality. There is an infinite truth, an absolute power. The spirit's mightiness shall cast off its mask. Its greatness shall be felt, shaping the world's course. It shall be seen in its own veilless beam, a star rising from the inconscient night, a sun climbing to supernature's peak. All then shall change. A magic order comes, overtopping this mechanical universe. A mightier race shall inhabit the mortal world. On nature's luminous tops, on the life.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.